I really appreciate the invitation to be here again this year. I really enjoy coming to the Fuel Ethanol Workshop because the people that come here, the people that run the plants, that do the work day to day, are what's making our industry grow in the way that it is today. People that come to this Fuel Ethanol Workshop are the people that are producing the 6.3 billion gallons of ethanol that our industry is producing today at 120 different plants. You are the folks that are building the 77 ethanol facilities currently under construction that will add another 6 billion gallons of capacity, bringing our industry to more than 12 billion gallons of production by sometime next year. You are the people that are generating more than $46 billion in gross output, that are employing 146,000 people across the country. You are the people that are adding to the economic vitality across rural America. You are the people that are creating the statistics that I get to talk about in Washington. Mike talked about the growth of the industry over the past several years, and indeed that growth has been phenomenal. When I started in this industry some 20 years or three children or 80 pounds ago, we were producing just 600 million gallons. The kind of growth that you see today is a testament not just to the work of the Renewable Fuels Association, but to each and every one of you and the people that have come to this Fuel Ethanol Workshop year after year to learn about our industry, to learn about new technologies, to make their own operations better. The first Fuel Ethanol Workshop in St. Louis, right here in this city. How many in this audience were here at that very first one? You ought to stand up. I can't tell if people are. But I know Ray Katzen, Phil Madsen, Dave Vandegrin, the people, the pioneers in our industry were at that very first Fuel Ethanol Workshop. Those are the people that deserve a lot of the credit for where our industry has come. 20 years from now, perhaps when we are filling this entire arena, not just the arena floor, each of you will have some measure of pride to take in what we are building, because our industry is in a state of evolution. And it's a very exciting time to be a part of this growing industry, this very dynamic industry. I've said before, and I'll say it again, we will be unrecognizable as an industry 5 years from now, because we're certainly unrecognizable from what we were 5 years ago. And the changes that are coming to our industry are all for the better. You'll hear about a lot of the technologies over the next couple of days to make our industries more efficient, our plants more economic, moving to new technologies and new feedstocks. That's where our industry is growing. Today, ethanol is blended in 50% of the nation's fuel. 50%. Every single gallon of gasoline sold in New York is blended with ethanol. Every single gallon of gasoline sold in California is blended with ethanol. Every single gallon of gasoline sold in Houston, Texas, where big oil company executives have to drive to work every day on your fuel, is testament to how far we have come. But we certainly have a long way to go. These are heady times for our industry. Last October, in this very building, the President of the United States gave a tremendous talk about the importance of ethanol to our nation's economic, energy, and environmental future. The President talked again in his State of the Union address. The President has visited plants of ours. He speaks to our conferences. He seldom misses an opportunity to talk about the importance of renewable fuels to our nation's energy and economic future. Thanks to people like Poet and ICM and Fagan, the Indy Racing League is now running on 100% ethanol. This past Sunday, I was in Iowa for the Iowa Corn 250, and I watched one of these races demonstrating the performance value of our fuel in a very effective way. Our fuel, our industry, has come of age. Ethanol is now a regular feature of the Wall Street Journal, Business Week, the nightly news. And that's some good and some bad, but it reflects the fact that our industry has grown up, and we've got to face new challenges. And yes, with this growth, with our success, comes criticism. The food versus fuel discussion that we're hearing today, we need to address head on, as Mike indicated. We need to be the ones to inform people that when we process corn into ethanol, we're not taking food out of the mouths of babies. We're borrowing the starch, and we're leaving behind a very high-value, high-protein feed product that is then going to those food markets. I am the poster child for the fact that we have too much starch in our diet. We have to remind people of that. We have to remind people that technology is not stagnant, that we're going to get greater and greater yields from an acre of corn, that technology is going to allow us to satisfy demand for grain used in feed, fuel, and fiber markets across this country. We need to be doing that much more loudly, much more effectively. We also need to remind people that, gosh darn it, gasoline has a far greater impact on consumer food prices than does a bushel of corn. You buy a box of Special K in the grocery store, it's 5 cents of a bushel of corn in that box. All the rest is packaging, marketing, transportation, which is all impacted by the price of oil. The RFA last week issued a study indicating that the price of gasoline has more than twice the impact of the price of corn on food prices. We have a responsibility to make sure people have the facts, and conferences like this will help do that. We also have a responsibility, as our industry grows, to make sure that the product that we are producing is of the highest quality. We have to make sure that consumers using our fuel have no issues with it. Our industry has been working with ASTM on a cross-check program that Kelly Davis of Chippewa Valley will be talking about over the next couple of days. I encourage all plants to participate in that program, but to make sure that quality is always at the forefront of your thinking. As the industry grows, we also have a tremendous responsibility for safety. Again, as ethanol is moving to new parts of the country, new questions are being raised about ethanol safety from first responders. The Renewable Fuels Association has just issued a DVD with the U.S. Fire Marshals on fire safety with ethanol. I encourage you to either download it from our website or to get it from our booth that's here. But the fact of the matter is, we absolutely have greater responsibilities as we grow in size and become a more ubiquitous component of the motor fuel market. I will assure you that our industry is going to continue to grow. Just a couple of weeks ago, the EPA released the final rules for the renewable fuel standard that set out a requirement for refiners, as you know, of 7.5 billion gallons by the year 2012. We are far above that now, but that program does bring new responsibilities to our industry: registration, reporting, the creation of renewable identification numbers. The RFA, in conjunction with EPA, had conducted a workshop a few weeks ago to give our industry an indication of what their responsibilities would be. We have copies of that presentation available for you. But know that if you're an ethanol plant, you have to be registered with EPA by the 1st of September. Your first reporting requirements are going to be November 1st. We are here to help, but this program is coming, and you need to be ready for it. Washington has seen the success of the renewable fuel standard and is intent upon building upon that success. And that spells great opportunity for all of us. In a recent poll that was done, more than 3 out of every 4 Americans believe we need to be doing much more. We need to be maximizing the production and use of renewable fuels like ethanol. Congress has got that message. Congress saw what the renewable fuel standard has done for our industry. As you may recall, in the summer of 2005, when the Congress was debating the renewable fuel standard, there were a lot of people that said at that time, there's no way that this industry is going to be able to produce 7.5 billion gallons of ethanol. And if they can produce it, there's no way they're going to be able to get it to the marketplace because there just aren't enough trains. Well, inspired by that action by the Congress, the marketplace responded. Our industry has obviously grown at a tremendous rate, and we're going to hit that 7.5 billion gallon mark, not in 2012, but by sometime this year. And we have demonstrated as well that there isn't a corner in this country where we can't get ethanol to. The transportation system that we have created, the virtual pipeline that I like to call it, is continuing to expand, and we're seeing new market developments all across the country. We will soon be in the Southeast. We will soon be at 10% in California, and the market opportunities will just continue to grow. We see right now a very real opportunity to be blended in 10% ethanol in every single gallon of gasoline sold in the country. But don't take that from me. The oil industry has recognized that fact as well. In this very building, again, last October, the president of the American Petroleum Institute, Red Cavaney, acknowledged as much, saying that he saw a future of 12 to 14 billion gallons of ethanol. Now, quite frankly, the oil companies like ethanol as a blend component in the way that they can use it, they can control it. They're not real wild about E85, but that's okay. We're going to get there, too. We're going to build beyond just being a blend component in gasoline. We're going to build more E85 stations. General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler are certainly doing their part to get more flexible fueled vehicles on the road. Our industry is doing our part in terms of making sure that we commercialize cellulosic ethanol technology so that there's sufficient quantities of ethanol to meet that new demand. And the oil companies will, by hook or by mandate, get to the point where they're putting in the infrastructure for that refueling. We will get there, but there will be challenges before that, and we stand ready to meet those challenges. Last week, the United States Senate passed a comprehensive energy bill again. About midnight, they passed a bill that requires 36 billion gallons of ethanol by 2022. I got to tell you, it's got the oil companies just seeing red. They can't believe this. But it is a part of the future. There was very little debate about what the number was. Again, having seen the success of the renewable fuel standard that passed in 2005, the Congress is anxious to do what the 2005 bill did for grain ethanol, to do the same thing for cellulosic ethanol. And so by 2016, this bill would require 3 billion gallons of cellulosic ethanol. It sets a marker down that tells the investment community there's going to be a market here, there's going to be an investment opportunity, and hopefully it will inspire researchers and the commercialization of cellulosic ethanol. I believe that it will. There were debates on that bill, of course, and if you have the opportunity, you ought to give Senator Chuck Grassley and Senator John Thune and Dick Durbin and Jeff Bingaman and others who fought hard to get that bill done, give them a big old hug. Because they're fighting for you. They're fighting for our industry. They're fighting for value-added agriculture. And I am confident that when an energy bill passes the United States Congress, an accelerated and a vastly expanded renewable fuel standard is going to be a part of that package. This morning, as I speak, the House of Representatives is taking up energy legislation. They're marking up a bill as well. And it is likely that something gets to the floor in the early part of July in the House of Representatives, and you could have a conference before the end of the fall. Whether something gets to the President's desk or not is going to be tied up in a lot of politics with respect to coal and CAFE, but it will happen at some point. It is inevitable that we have energy legislation, and it is a certainty that a much more aggressive renewable fuel standard will be a part of it. I will tell you as well that as fuel policy is debated in Washington, D.C. today, it is evolving. And you will likely see a great deal more attention paid to carbon. That is something for all of you to be very much aware of. Washington is a bit behind the curve on this. They usually are. They are focused on a BTU matrix for fuel policy today. But as they see states like California moving to a low-carbon fuel standard and Minnesota picking up that challenge and other states looking to do so as well, Washington doesn't like to be behind the curve very long, and they are scrambling to get their arms around a low-carbon fuel standard. And I would suspect that you're going to see that in some fashion within the next couple of years. The House of Representatives, the House Energy Committee, when they introduced a comprehensive energy bill a few weeks ago, had a low-carbon standard as part of it. Now, nobody really knows what it means, and nobody knows how to measure it, and nobody really knows how to implement it. But they know that that's where they want to get to. And the Congress is working hard to try to figure that out. And we need to help them. So my charge to each one of you here is to understand what your own carbon footprint is and to look to technologies that will reduce your carbon footprint. Because whether the Congress does it or the marketplace creates it, there will be opportunities for low-carbon fuels in the future, and ethanol will have a very important role. I will also tell you that while the Congress is scrambling to get their arms around this issue, the administration is already moving ahead. The Bush administration has recognized that climate change is absolutely an important issue, and they are intent upon moving a regulation before 2009 that establishes a program for refiners to reduce carbon emissions. EPA and the Department of Energy and the Department of Agriculture are meeting regularly in anticipation of a public rulemaking later on this year. Low-carbon fuels are a part of our future, and we need to recognize that. The RFA has seen that that is absolutely coming and has tried as much as we can to lead on this issue. The Renewable Fuels Association is the first, and I believe still the only, energy trade association that is indeed carbon neutral. We joined the Chicago Climate Exchange earlier this year. We are proud of that fact. Other ethanol companies have done the same thing lately. It is part of the future, and we have to take advantage of the opportunities that that will provide. You're going to be hearing a lot about carbon over the next couple of days. Your keynote speaker will talk about the very real threat to our earth of climate change. It is a fact of life in Washington today. Europe has been far ahead of us. We don't like to trail. We're trying to catch up. It's happening in Washington. You need to be aware of it. I hope that you're recognizing our industry is growing. I hope that you take some measure of pride in what we've been able to accomplish together. But I also hope that you recognize that with that growth comes new responsibilities. And I hope that you recognize that our industry is evolving, that there are new challenges out there that will need to be faced, but there are also new opportunities. This conference will give you a great opportunity to learn about some of those challenges, to learn how you can seize upon some of those opportunities. And again, the Renewable Fuels Association is going to continue to work with you to help us move this nation to a more sustainable energy future. I can assure you the future remains very bright. I thank you for all the support that you've given the Renewable Fuels Association over the years. I thank BBI for once again having a tremendously successful fuel ethanol workshop, and I wish you nothing but the best in the next couple of days. Thank you very much.